This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for coming out this morning to the August edition of Landmark Women. I'm Monica Lindemann, Head of Development. I'm just stepping in while Carissa is on leave. I just have some public service announcements to make before I hand over to Sandy Forbes to introduce our guest speaker today. So the points that I need to let you know, that this event is being recorded. So if you have any concerns about anonymity, just so that you know, if you ask a question today, it will be recorded. If you would like to ask a question, please wait for the microphone to be handed to you so that we can capture that. And all of the presentation will then be available on our website after the event. My second announcement is that, unfortunately, we need to change the date for next month's event to the 27th of September. We'll send out some information about that, but there is a significant cycling road race on that day and there would be terrible disruption to the roads and car parking. So just to avoid that whole mess, we'll move the event to another date. But stand by for further information there. Thank you. Sandy.
Thank you. I can tell you it's the 27th and the speaker is Daryl Karp, who's the director of the Museum of Australian Democracy. And so same time, same place, different date. Okay, and we will send out emails to remind you. Well, a great pleasure this morning to introduce Louise Page, whom many of you know. I see her kissing some of you, and not the babies, little election joke. Louise Page, as most of you know, is a soprano, and she's one of Australia's most highly regarded singers, appearing in opera, operetta, oratorio, cabaret, recital, and broadcasts. Her vocal talent and gift for interpretation has been widely acclaimed as a winner of the inaugural Mietta's Song Recital Competition, the vocal grand final of the ABC Young Performer of the Year Award, the Robert Stoltz APEC Scholarship to Vienna, and the Belgian Radio and Television Opera in Bel Canto Prize. And she lives in Canberra. Louise has performed throughout Europe, including roles at the Vienna State Opera as a member of the Young Artists Program. She performs regularly in Sydney, Melbourne, Canberra, and regional areas. She's been a soloist with the Sydney, Queensland, Canberra, and Central Coast Symphony Orchestras and the National Capital Orchestra. She performs in recital for many organizations, including Musica Viva and the ABC, and has been a featured artist in the Australian Festival of Chamber Music and the Canberra International Music Festival. In 2007, Louise received a Canberra Critics Circle Award for Musical Excellence, and in the same year, she was recognized with the Canberra Times Artist of the Year Award, in particular for her presentation, Nellie Melba, Queen of Song. In the 2013 Australia Day Honours list, Louise was awarded an OAM for her services to the performing arts. So please welcome Louise, who's going to sing for her morning tea.
Well, thank you. It's lovely to be here, and I think it'd be easier to sing than speak, actually. There was one more announcement, too. Those of you who need the audio loop, I believe it's about to be turned on, or has been turned on.
It's working.
Oh, great, good. Thank you. So Sandy asked me here, and I'm thrilled, chuffed. I wondered if she'd got the right person for a while. Delighted to be here to speak to you, and there's many, she said, many friends' faces that I know here, and lovely to see you all. I hope you won't be disappointed. Sandy asked if I'd speak about my life, my work, and my passions, and I guess as a musician, they're all the same. And I guess that's why it was so distressing for many of us at the ANU School of Music last year when our lives were totally disrupted. But I suppose there are three things in my life. That's my family. I'm married to John for 30-odd years. I was married at 19. I have two gorgeous girls, Mariana, 19, and Elizabeth, 17. And We have tried to combine our life so that my singing, John's career as, well, he's now retired, but as a member of the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, and my daughter's lives somehow all managed to commingle. And I must say that Canberra has been a very easy place to do this. I'm a very proud Canberran, having lived here since 1984, on and off, and love being part of this community. I fell in love with Canberra when I was first came here as a teenager. I should start at the beginning, shouldn't I? I'll ramble forever. I was born in England, and I moved to Perth with my family when I was 5 years old. I lived there until I was married, and my husband then got the job with Foreign Affairs and Trade, and we moved to Canberra in 1983, I believe that was. So from then on, we'd both met in Perth, John and I, as teachers in a teachers' college in WA there, but I was studying music as a cellist, and John was studying politics, social sciences, that sort of thing. We both recognised quite early that our calling was not teaching at the time. I think we were both quite shy people. And, of course, I was only 20 at the time and barely older than the people I was meant to be teaching, so I think that was going to be a very hard life. And I had this passion for music. Even though I was there as a cellist, we had to take a second instrument, and mine was going to be singing. So that's where I got the bug, although I must admit I'd also got it at high school as well with school choirs. I was playing the cello in the orchestra, but it was the choir that really got me. And suddenly to have the opportunity to sing was wonderful. So when we came to Canberra, I'd heard about this wonderful school of music, which then at the early 80s was in its heyday, and John went off to the Department of Foreign Affairs and I took a second degree there. So music has been there right from the start, singing since I was 18 or so, which is actually probably a late starter. So I said there was three parts of my life. So my family, the other is my music, and the other is my faith. And I know very little about religion, I must say. All I know is that I have been loved every day of my life, and I'm very pleased and very glad that I've hardly ever been challenged in that. My life has been very happy, very easy. And I still, I hope, have a lot of compassion and a lot of empathy for people who have suffered in their lives. I feel that I have had a very easy life. And I try, in what I think is a very selfish occupation, my singing, to lend some love and some comfort, maybe, to people who enjoy music and maybe somehow are touched by it. I don't know. It's hard to explain. But as I said, those three things are, I feel, what are three important elements to my life. So, growing up in Perth, my father and mother were children of the war in England. No opportunities, and they left England to get opportunities for their three children, my two brothers and I, hoping that we would find more opportunities here, which of course we have in Australia. My brother is an elder brother, a psychiatrist. My younger brother is an Anglican minister in the church, and trying to have a career in music. So when John and I were married, we came to Canberra. I won a scholarship to study music in Vienna, which threw a cat amongst the pigeons, I must say, for a while there. What were we going to do? And it was quite a miracle in a way that my scholarship was for a year, the Robert Stoltz scholarship to Vienna to study at the conservatorium. John tried his best to get some work over there, but it didn't happen until suddenly somebody doing exactly the same sort of work as him, which was nuclear non-proliferation work, suddenly retired at the Australian Embassy in Vienna. It was quite a miracle. Just decided to up and leave, exactly doing that same type of work that John was doing, exactly at the right level, and they just handed it to him. So instead of the year that we had in Vienna, we were there for 4 years, and as well as my year at scholarship at the conservatorium, which I must say was was wonderful, but not a patch on our School of Music here, as it was in the time. We had 4 years in Vienna instead. So I then went on to study as a young artist at the Vienna State Opera, which was for a year. Was meant to be 2 years, but unfortunately they closed it down after 1 year. But I thought and I knew that at the beginning. They told me that it would only be for 1 year before they closed it. From then on, just sort of freelanced around. It was a wonderful opportunity to being at the opera and also being at the conservatorium, because it meant I just learnt German properly, mixed with other students. Most of them were international. Looking at the life in Vienna and the life of an artist, and then of course to be at the Vienna State Opera was just fantastic. We had free student tickets to any performance that we wanted to. We had our own box, which were for its employees of the Staatsoper. But for instance, the Royal Box happened to be open, we would have free tickets there instead. So we either had the worst seats or the best seats. It was an absolutely glorious time, and I learnt a lot. I must say, I looked at it and realised what a stressful life it was. To be a musician, I think it's a very selfish occupation. You have to be, and I think even more so for a singer, because you have to be constantly aware of your own body and how tired you are, how sick you are, your nutrition, etc., etc., and the stress of it. Sort of the way it plays with your mental capacities, if you're having to memorise, etc., etc. So it was I realised it was going to be a very, very hard and long road to follow, but a very gorgeous one at the same time. After 4 years, we decided to return to Australia. It was, as I said, I was a late starter. After having done 2 degrees and had a few years overseas with John and Solomon Islands. So by the time I'd finished my, as I considered it, training at the time, I was 32, and of course it's time for children as well. That was running out, and we came back to Australia to have our children and to try and make a life here, which we have managed to do. And as I said, trying to combine all those elements, the children, John's career, and of course he had a regular income as opposed to the life of a musician, which is very irregular. We settled in Australia, in Canberra, and in some ways, that was hard, and I regretted it, in that we have no opera company here, no large population, but in many ways it's actually been a great benefit, because it's been such a wonderful, well, I don't like to call it a training ground, but something like that, that you know, where I can get up and test my craft and create shows and do wonderful things here for the Canberra public. Which it might have been a lot harder to do when there's so much more competition in Sydney, as well as more opportunities. But it's been just a glorious life here in Canberra, but I do feel like I know most of the people in my audiences and many, many opportunities. I also love Canberra. As I said, I fell in love when we first moved. Came with my school choir and orchestra, doing a tour from WA, travelling around the eastern, down, up and down the eastern seaboard there. We arrived at Canberra at 6 o'clock in the morning. WA is quite warm. We were told it was -1 outside, dreading it, and we got off to one of those beautiful Canberra mornings where it's blue and still and clear and the frost is on the ground, and I was hooked from then on. And that was in the 70s, and I must have been 16 at the time. And I somehow knew that I'd be back. And it has been a lovely life here. Really enjoying the life here, bringing up children, being part of the wonderful musician community here, musical community, both amateur and professional, which often intermingles. And I guess we'll be seeing more and more of that now that after what's happened at the School of Music, that the line will be blurred, I think, even further, which might not be a bad thing, I don't know. But so to me, it's just been about being part of the community, and that's what I've really loved about it all. I sometimes regret that I've not been up in Sydney to take part in the opera there, but there's been so many more opportunities. So otherwise, I think that's the sort of the outline of my story. seeing the wonderful things up in Europe, over in Europe, realising, you know, I was never at the top, of course, but I saw the top, and I think I realised then that it was perhaps not for me, that I wanted more than that, as in a broader sense, that I looked at it and saw there was very little to love there, that we had wonderful apartment right in the centre of Vienna because of my husband's job rather than my scholarship that I was supposed to be on. But there was no garden, no pets, no children. And I think I realised that I needed a bit more than just that, as I said, a very selfish life where you have to cosset yourself all the time and look after your health and your mental energy. And I saw it destroy some people over there. There was one tenor in particular, Aragal, who was a fantastic tenor, but he got to the stage where he couldn't actually face the audience. He had to sing off to the side or with his back to them because it was so stressful. And I've seen Pavarotti in rehearsal, hunkered down, miserable as anything, just rehearsing with the orchestra. And I was thinking that that's the toll it takes, because, of course, the higher you get, the more pressure is on people to perform their best all the time. And if they have an off night, of course, it's splashed all over the press the next day. So for me, I've had many off nights and people have been forgiving, and I think I relaxed at that point. I must have been, I think, when my children were about 8 years old, when I suddenly decided if I was going to sing, it was because of the love of it, not for the money, not for the glory, if you'd like to call it that. It's because I was enjoying it and I felt it's something I had to do. And it has been very much a part of that. And of course, when the children were little, it was very difficult trying to keep the two things going. The wonderful Philippa Candy, who has stood by me as my accompanist and a friend, dear friend, for so many years, used to come when holding babies in arms and toddlers and such like, putting up with the chaos just to keep us singing and performing all the way through those troublesome years. It was very difficult, and I remember once sort of saying to my husband, I don't think I can do both well, be a mother and a singer. And he was the one who encouraged me, to said, you've come so far that at the moment, you can't give it up now. And he's always stood by me as much as he could with babysitting and opportunities. And if I had one concert in Melbourne, I would have to sort of take the whole family over there. So it ended up costing us a fortune, far more than the fee I'd be getting, just to sort of take the whole family and accommodate them and such like. He's always stood by me in that way. And so the children have put up with a lot over the years, but also got a lot of benefit out of it as well. And I think when they were about 8 years old, that's when my eldest daughter was 8 years old, and I decided then that I had to do it for love, for passion. And I think things changed at that point. When I stopped striving, I think I always knew I was meant to be the best singer in the world. And stopped sort of any ambitions, just decided to stay amongst my community and love what I did, whatever that was. And many opportunities have come my way, and I've just really enjoyed them and made sure that it doesn't matter if I'm singing for no money or whatever, it's all the same, that this is something I'm doing for love. So that's the basic outline of my story. I know I've missed, there's large gaps there. I might take questions at this point and see if anything more comes up that... Thanks, Sandy.
On? Yes? Good. Okay. Questions for Louise? I have lots.
Louise, I'm wondering if your girls have inherited any of your talent.
They're both very musical. I spent a lot of time with them when they were younger. They have a lot of talent. My elder one, she'll probably regret me saying this, but she has no discipline whatsoever. We've never pushed it with either of them, given them opportunities if they want it, but just made sure that they have that exposure in the beginning. The elder one, she plays a guitar, and they both love their pop music. I said, but she never had... They both went to the Woden Valley Youth Choir, which was just fantastic for them, that discipline, but as I said, my older one didn't really like that sort of structure, whereas my younger one thrived on it. adored it until she eventually, it coincided that she had to go to high school and up to the senior choir at the same time, and there was a lot of rehearsal for the senior choir, sometimes meeting 3-4 times a week if they've got performances on. And that to me was, being a mother doing the running around as well as my own thing, was suddenly going to be a lot of pressure on me. So I said, just wait, find out how much homework you've got, and if you want to go back to it later, you can. And I think she would have loved to go on back, but she didn't. But they both played flute and clarinet and various things. My younger daughter has a fine voice, but I think is looking at doing medicine next year, and so I think it's always going to be a bit of a hobby for them. They get frustrated because they're often asked that question when they're out in public, do you sing like mummy? When they were little, of course, they were very good about it. They'd give a very sort of considered answer. So they're just such both lovely girls. They have the talent. The opportunities have been there, but I think they've both gone in other ways.
Any other questions?
Louise, you mentioned in your early life that you thought your training at School of Music here compared favourably with that in Austria.
Yes.
Would you care to elaborate on that?
Yes, sure. As I said, well, I was a student at the School of Music in the 80s, when the early 80s, when it was in its heyday then, the late 70s and the 80s. I'd done a Bachelor of Music, which was 4 years, as opposed to 3, as it is now, and such expert teaching and so many opportunities, and again, that's something that Canberra has provided so well, opportunities for students to get up and perform. It's such a beneficial thing to have a comforting, a secure audience to get up and test your skills. So I'd had many opportunities as a young singer here in Canberra and in Australia. Won the scholarship to Vienna, which is supposed to be the be-all and end-all of music, to find that the conservatorium at the time was not... I mean, there's a Hochschule as well, music high school, but the conservatorium was nothing compared to here. As I said, it was a lot of international students, and our main job seemed to be to learn German. The classes were nowhere near as thorough or as high level as what we'd been doing here. I did have a bit more performance exposure with the opera class, but really the level and the intensity of the course was just nothing compared to this. It seemed a very general community level course. We didn't have the fantastic music library that we had here, or any of the facilities. You couldn't get a practice room unless you booked at 7:30 in the morning or something like that. There just didn't seem to be the facilities or the organisation or the wonderful staff that we have here. It was very disappointing in many ways, and many people who won the scholarship before me stayed 2 weeks and then left to find their own way, spend that time, their money on the scholarship in a different way. I stayed just because I felt that it was useful to really get hold of German properly by mixing with so many other people. Whereas if I'd been on my own, I probably wouldn't except to have been down at the shops ordering my sandwich or whatever. That was all. I said to have had this high level of expertise here with these wonderful teachers at the ANU 20-odd years ago was a great shame. We had wonderful teachers. They didn't seem to... In Vienna, I worked with Waldemar Kment, who was a very fine singer. He ran the opera class, and that was one of the best things. And I had my teacher, Hilde de Grote. Oh, sorry, that was at the Vienna State Opera, who gave me singing lessons. So they were the two real beneficial things, which is, you know, as you say, you have to have this one-on-one tuition with people to actually develop your music skills, which is what's missing now at the ANU. As part of their course. So it was very, very different, should I say, to be over there, to live a different type of life over there with different experiences. But I said, for me, what I just experienced at the School of Music was far greater than anything I found in Vienna at the time. Probably I needed just a one-on-one lesson at that point, and exposure, which I got later when I went to the State Opera the next year, that performance on stage. But the conservatorium, as I said, was just not a patch on ours, as it used to be.
Maybe you could say a few words about the loss of some of that at the School of Music. Mm. Do you feel like saying anything?
No, it's every time I think I'm over it. it's hard. I don't know much about what's happening now, but it seems to me the direction is that they want to write about music rather than make music from now on, because, of course, it's a lot cheaper. So all the private teaching, all the music teaching, the performance teaching will happen by private teachers out in the community, which is, you know, well, people like me and all the ex-lecturers at the School of Music who are now just private teachers. That will still be happening, but we'll just be on a private scale, and what the ANU will handle would be the musicology aspects of it, as far as I can tell, so that I don't have anything to do with it now. It was still going on. It's just different, that's all, and... so many of us feel that it's a detrimental thing for the community, that we had such roots in the community, when so many of the high school teachers, the performers, the students have had contact with either staff or students from the School of Music, when we had so many people out there in the world, in world orchestras, world opera companies all around the world, but that's sort of not relevant to the university life, that it doesn't bring in research dollars. It's just something that's not of interest to them, and that's their prerogative, I suppose. But I can't help feeling it's a loss to the Canberra community rather than the ANU. And, of course, it's not the ANU's job to support the community in this way, but so it's still a great loss.
Mm. Shelley, please. I was most impressed with the 12-year-old who sang with you at the International Music Festival. Mm. And I was surprised at the maturity of that child's voice.
Yes.
And when I asked her how old she was, I thought, oh, I gasped.
Yep.
And so I'd like to ask you about a child who has been singing before she was born because her mother sang to her all the time and just sings constantly.
Mm.
At 11, is she too young to start music training other than the choir at school?
It really depends. Yes, Stephanie, she was 11. Gorgeous little singer with a great big voice. I think if a child is already doing so much on her own, then yes, you've got to nurture it and cultivate it. When I was a student at the School of Music, learning. I remember my teacher, who's Ron McConaghy, always saying, you shouldn't teach somebody to sing until they were 16 or 18, when the body has stopped growing, especially for boys. And that seemed to be very much the philosophy at the time. But now, when every kid is grabbing their hairbrush and belting out songs, I think you've probably got to help them, or else before they do damage, that you should be showing them the right way to sing if they're showing an interest in it. Musical training is a lot more than just singing as well, that you can be teaching them the theory and even piano. I think that's probably important for a singer these days. It used to be once upon a time that you could have a career as a singer without being able to read music very well or such like, because people just taught you to do it and you learned it by rote. These days there's so much competition that you can't. That's not good enough anymore. You have to have your own very strong musical background. So there's all that sort of training that can go on, music theory, stage development, and I was talking to... I've just been adjudicating the Sydney Stedford singing divisions in the last month, and I was talking to Nita Morm, who is a very fine piano teacher and mother of Tamara Anna-Chislovska and teacher of people like, well, Tamara as well as Simon Tedeschi and various others. She's a very fine teacher, and saying that she used to teach all her pupils, including Tamara, drama and speech as well, that they had to enrol in the Stedford, not just playing piano, but also getting up and speaking and reciting and acting, all part of their training. And I think that stage confidence is something you can give to children as well. But as for music singing training, yes, why not? If they're already doing a lot of it, choir is important. But if they really have potential as a soloist, then the time has to come when you have got to stop telling them to blend and be like everyone else. You're trying to encourage them to be a soloist and to stand out. But there's so much music training to be gathered from choirs and so much more.
She already plays three instruments, and she was 4 years old.
Oh, wonderful.
Composing her own music.
Oh, my goodness.
On the computer.
And yes.
She transposes music from one instrument to another and just loves to sing. And as a matter of fact, she sang at her grandfather's funeral.
Mm. Yes. Yes. She was gorgeous. Yes. Well, in that case, she should be grabbing it with every opportunity. Yes. There are some people who specialise in children singing. Again, the philosophy is that you should be trying to get them to sing very naturally in the beginning while their bodies are growing, and I think that's probably still wise. But the time comes when the bodies have stopped growing where you need to start getting them to manufacture a sound. So instead of being very natural and childlike, folk-like, then you start needing to produce the sound, manufacture the sound and such like, which is quite confronting, but that's got to be done safely. But, yes, she should be doing everything she could if that's where her passion lies, because that's what's going to drive her, is if she has all that talent, but if that's what she wants, and then that's it's going to be what gets her there in the end.
I was wanting to make a comment on your opinion on the current production, Free Rein, of Phantom of the Opera. Mm. They chose to advertise the fact that their two leads were imports. Mm. Important. Yeah, and they felt that was a great draw card. They weren't using the locals. I found that very offensive.
yes, I understand that. It's hard to know. I'm afraid I don't know how long the run of the season is, but I think...
Well, they've actually said they were booked out for their season and they had to put on another weekend. It was chock-a-block.
Yes.
And could have gone for another week.
Well, is it several weeks, the season?
Yes.
Mm. It can go both ways. It always offends me when we bring in imports, when we have so many very talented people of our own who could do it. But on the other hand, audiences do like to see variety as well. And these people, I'm supposed to be experts at what they do. So I haven't read much about them or seen the show yet. But I believe they had a help in training the cast as well, because they know so much about the show, so they've done it many times. So I'm sure they're going to provide an absolutely brilliant production. But it would have been nice to give our own people a go as well sometimes. And there might be a second cast, I don't know, or understudies, local people, who might get a chance. I think that's one of the very beneficial things that Canberra plays in the arts, is that we have opportunities for our people to train, which is something I benefited very much from, being able to get up in lead roles in small productions. So that when I was actually thrown in small roles in large productions over in Vienna, sort of at least I'd had some training on stage and knew what should be happening. And I think we really need to give our own people that opportunity. And we have some very, very fine musicians, actors, performers here in Canberra. So I hope that there are some understudies that might get a shot as a second cast. But I really haven't got that much information about it. But yes.
Thank you. Louise, you've spoken about damaging the voice and so on, especially in relation to children. I'd be interested to know what that involves exactly. How does a voice get damaged? What actually happens? Presumably the voice is product of bits of skin and so on.
So
I'd be interested in that. And what are the dangerous activities and... Mm. How one might avoid that problem for adults and children.
Yes, that's right, because it's a occupational hazard for singers. And I think I've been very lucky in that as I'm getting older, and I'm probably at my vocal peak right now, I think I've got there because I haven't been singing every night in the opera for 30 years or whatever. But I think what you have to consider when you are a singer or training somebody or have somebody being trained is that we're athletes. And you have to consider yourself as that we've got... It's about aerobic capacity and muscle use. And you have to train yourself like any athlete. You have to warm up properly. You have to keep training those muscles in the best possible way. You would never consider just getting up out of bed one day and running a marathon. You have to train hard for that. You have to train in different areas, so stamina as well as the start and whatever, if you're running a 100-metre sprint. And I consider that, for singers, that you have to be a sprinter as well as a weightlifter and a marathon runner and various different things. You have to have so many different aspects to your control of your muscles. So you would, if you were an athlete, you would be breaking down all those different areas and practicing your start and your finish and your general aerobic capacity and stamina levels, etc., etc. So breaking down and working on all those different areas and keeping it in good nick. What happens when you start straining muscles? And of course, most of the muscles that we have in a neck here, including the vocal folds, as they call them now, vocal cords, it used to be, are very tiny little muscles. So you're trying to take away as much pressure from these as you can and put on the rest of your body. And people think we sing from here, and you see people straining like this, you know, great ropes of muscles here. But in fact, it's your body which has got to do the work, and I think that's the job of the teacher, is to really impress upon people to avoid damage, is how much work your body has to do rather than these little muscles here. And it's training those and keeping them in good condition, which is so important. We had a lecture from the physiotherapist from the ACO, the Australian Chamber Orchestra, once, and she was saying, you know, because they have a lot of repetitive strain injury, you know, with lots of wrist action and such like. And she said it always happens from tension, that if you're relaxed, you won't get that sort of activity. So, again, that's why for singers in particular, musicians, it's so important to always be well-rested and always be well-prepared so that you're avoiding that stress and tension, which puts strain in here. But if you have to do a lot of talking or a lot of shouting, that's the sort of damage that gets done, especially shouting. You have to be prepared to work from your body so that I'll just step away from the microphone for a minute, but it's that sort of you know, if you've got to shout, it's got to be that reaction from your body working it here rather than here where you're starting to do this sort of action. Being aware of that sort of placement, that you're using your head as a megaphone rather than getting everything to come from here, you know, straining here. It's always got to be in a different type of spot. And, of course, it just takes years of training. And I guess it's so easy for people to grab at opportunities, sing something that's far too hard that they haven't trained properly for, they're not set up yet. And that's when the damage comes in, when they're singing something that's far too big. You know, if you're given an opportunity suddenly to have a wonderful role where you haven't done very much of that sort of thing, 5 nights a week, it can be very, very, if you haven't had that sort of track record, that constant preparation, that constant work like an athlete to build up to it. So I think that's the sort of thing that I would be saying is, you know, body work, stamina work, avoiding anything that makes you tired. And, of course, when you are tired, these are the big muscles are the first ones that give up because it's so much energy to keep them working. So you start straining your vocal cords instead because it takes far less energy to get those working than it does to keep your whole body working. Sorry, it's a very general answer, but...
Louise, do you think you were born with a voice, or do you think is it all training?
I think it's probably a bit of both. I think, as I said to Shirley, you have to have that passion. But I've heard so many people who were brilliantly trained, and there's something missing. There is never that spark. You know, if you were not born to be a singer, I think there's something missing. You see, you can sing brilliantly, really well, but just leaves the audience cold, or leaves me cold anyway, sometimes when I hear people sing. But other people can't, like Shirley was saying about her granddaughter, just can't stop singing. I think that sort of passion somehow, that musicality rather maybe than the singer, it might come out in as a pianist or a violinist instead, but that drive, that need to perform music, to sing, I think is something that is innate, that you have to have. And hopefully then good training will see you in good stead. But I think other people who just decide they'd like to be a singer, or their parents more like would like decide that they want to be a singer, so can get very well trained, but always have, for me, something that's lacking. That's that spirit, that drive, that need, that creativity, that energy. And I think somehow it's I always think it's like living it's living in the right-hand side of your brain. The musicians and such like always have this creative, particularly composers as well, have this creative urge, which is very much a right-hand side of the brain drive, which makes us very impractical people in many ways. We haven't got the left-hand side of the brain working properly or something, I don't know, but it's that sort of area which really, it's a wonderful place to be living. In the right-hand side of your brain, the creative side. And I think it's that sort of imagination that goes with it, which to me is a sign of a good singer, that you can teach people over and over and over and say the same things over and over and they never get it. And then you get somebody who comes along who just has that imagination, understands what it should sound like or what it could sound like, and is willing to give it a go. And that's something that I think you just can't be born with, be trained with. Mm.
And we're just very, very lucky in Canberra that we have you here. And so thank you.
Oh, you're
for
very kind.
This morning.
Thank you, my pleasure. Thank you.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.